The question we're going to be dealing with today is, how come teens tend to go away from the church, at least the organized church these days? Is it something we're saying? Is it something we're doing? Or is there another reason? I'm Tom Baker. You're listening to Law and Gospel on this Friday, September the 3rd. This is Open Mic Friday, which means we may never talk about teens if enough phone calls come in, because you can talk about any subject you'd like on Open Mic Friday. The way to do so is phone me right now if you're in the St. Louis area, 505-7850. That's 505-7850. Anywhere else in North America, 1-800-730-2727. That's 1-800-730-2727. And as usual, I have a bunch of emails received at lawgospel@lawgospel.com. I sometimes get the impression from the emails that more people are listening to us archived. Archived, what does that mean? Well, it means that if you go to kfuo.org and you hit Law Gospel, you can hear quite a variety of programming that we've done in the past. Also, a couple of housekeeping duties. I'm going to be at St. Paul de Pere this Sunday, Labor Day weekend, at 9:30 a.m. if you're in the St. Louis area. I'll be doing the Bible study, and we're going to be giving out a free copy to each family who attends the Bible study of the latest Good News publication. Plus, we're going to be doing two other books that you'll be able to purchase at a reduced cost. The one is the latest edition of C.F.W. Walter's Law and Gospel, a reader's edition. And the other one is going to be, and it's kind of a little surprise, it is a book written by a non-Lutheran about Law and Gospel that I find fascinating. In fact, the PowerPoint presentation will be alluding to that, as well as some other items we're doing during the Bible study. So from 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. St. Louis time, 12345 Manchester. Just go to 270 in Manchester and go east about a half a mile. Also, this coming Monday is Labor Day. Sounds like I'll be in the studio. And we're going to do something special on this Labor Day. We're doing the regular readings for the following Sunday, but they just so happen to be two of my favorites, on the lost sheep and the lost coin. Do you have a friend that you'd really like to get them understanding the distinctions between law and a gospel in a way that perhaps they haven't understood? This will be a wonderful opportunity, 6:05 p.m. on Monday, as we're going to go through those two parables. But by using law and gospel, we're not only going to come up with a different name for each parable, but we're going to give some applications that you probably haven't heard before. So, suffice for that. Teens leaving the church. Now, there are a lot of reasons why people are saying that teens leave the church. Some would suggest that, well, you just get rebellious at that age and you don't want anybody telling you what to do. So if somebody says go to church, you're going to do the opposite. Well, I'm not so sure that's true, because we tell our teenagers to go to school, and they go to school, most of them. Others would say that the reason they're not going to church is they see the hypocritical attitude of most Christians. Now, this is really a problem from my point of view, because I think by nature, all human beings are, in a sense, hypocritical in that sense of the term. We're all kind of looking out for me as number one. It's part of our old nature, and Christians, they do that also. Now, what disturbs me is that some churches are trying to make the worship service more teen-friendly. And, well, you can probably draw a lot of teenagers if you change your worship services to rock bands and get away from a Christ-centered message. I mean, it's pretty easy to fill up a dance hall with teenagers, or there are some coffee houses and the like where teenagers like to go to because they just like enjoying themselves. But worship is really not in tune to that kind of item. Well, what you hear is a lot of people who are trying to bring young people in are more concerned about numbers than they are about the content of their message. And they'll talk this way all the time. We've just got to bring in more numbers. As though having a body in the pew makes any difference if the word isn't correct. Now, what got me thinking about this a bit is James had phoned up a couple of days ago, you may recall if you were listening, and asked me what a word meant. Methylbaptocostal. And I kind of figured it had something to do with a connection between Baptists and Pentecostals, I said. But, and I mentioned a little bit about Methodists, but that is, it's not a word so much as a phrase used by people to disparage the theology held by some evangelicals. They have a method, way of salvation, invite Christ into your heart. They have a Baptist nullification of the sacraments as God's means of grace. And they have a Pentecostal or experiential kind of way of getting to be with God. In fact, you can tell that somebody is moving towards that away from Christianity when they say, we're going to develop a worship experience. And they'll use the word experience. This, by the way, is exactly what Charles Finney talked about, that people need to have a really emotional experience, and that way the numbers will grow. Well, that's absolutely true. I mean, movie houses don't go out of business. If you have an emotional movie, and it doesn't have to be one where it's you're weeping all the time. It can be an action movie or an alien movie like some of us like. All it is a really entertaining movie. You'll feel a movie house. And some movies, you'll walk in, and you may be the only male in the whole movie house because it's a movie kind of for girls. They really like it. Or we used to go to the Shenandoah when I was at the seminary with, I won't mention Jim Belts' name, but anyway, he was a student, a great professor right now, one of the most brilliant minds around. But at any rate, on Saturdays when we were at the seminary, we would go to the Shenandoah down on Grand. And for 50 cents, we could see three horror movies. And they usually were Dracula or something along that line. And we were the only adults sitting in the whole movie theater. All the rest were kids and yelling and screaming. And we really kind of enjoyed it. We would analyze the movies from a theological point of view. And we really got disgusted when all of a sudden Dracula in some of the movies wasn't afraid of the cross anymore. I mean, that's just not fair. Well, be that as it may, I could fill a church with young people. You just go for their flesh. They like to be entertained. They like certain levels of music for their entertainment. But, of course, you have to stay on the milk of the word. You're not going to be able to get into the meat of the word. You're going to have to be talking about how they're going to be really helpful to others and so forth. But I have another reason why I believe that youth aren't coming to church. It's actually something I picked up from Kenda Greasy Dean. He says that your child is probably following a mutant form of Christianity. And what she is talking about, which is kind of interesting, and that's why I use what James was saying about Methylbaptocostal, She calls it a moralistic therapeutic deism. Moralistic therapeutic deism. Now, translate that. It's kind of a watered-down faith that portrays God as a divine therapist, and his chief goal is to boost people's self-esteem. Isn't that interesting? She believes, and I really agree with her, that most teens are abandoning the churches because of an imposter faith that is being taught in those churches. Not the true faith of Christianity, an imposter faith. Churches simply are not giving teens enough to be passionate about. She had interviewed teens about their faith, and they have a lot to say. They can talk about money, sex, and their family relationships. They found in interviewing 3,300 American teenagers, and that was between ages 13 and 17, that even if they called themselves Christian, they were somewhat indifferent and inarticulate about their faith. And by the way, this crossed all barriers, from Catholics to Protestants to conservative to liberal denominations. Frankly, 3 out of 4 American teenagers claim to be Christian, but fewer than half practice their faith, only half think of it as important, and most of them cannot talk coherently about their beliefs. In other words, from a law gospel perspective, these are people who are living under the law. They really believe, at least from the churches they attend, that God wants them to feel good and do good. And that's really moralistic, therapeutic deism. If Jesus enters in at all, it's because look at what a wonderful example he was. You know, Jesus cannot be an example for you to follow. What? Aren't we supposed to follow the example of Jesus? Well, you should, but it's impossible because you're a sinner. See, Jesus had something that to a great degree, we don't have. And that is that there are many passages where Jesus, in essence, is following his Father. And his Father is working through him. You and I simply don't have that perfect relationship with God the Father. So we may be able to mimic some of the things that Jesus does outwardly, but to have the perfect motivation of love, no, that just never happens this side of heaven. So the idea of thinking that Christianity uses Jesus as an example of who we are to follow falls far short. Yesterday we spoke about many denominations and churches because they have lost their first love, namely the theology of the cross. They're now talking about that the church ought to be active in all kinds of areas. And they're not talking about Christians being active. They're talking about the church because they really don't make that kind of a distinction. For example, in social ministry or environmental concerns. And as we pointed out yesterday, I haven't run across an environmental concern that some Christian doesn't disagree with somewhere along the line. And therefore, to speak from the pulpit in that way is really not to speak appropriately. Let's go to the phone lines right now at 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. I'm Tom Baker. With whom am I speaking?
Joe.
Joe, go ahead, Joe. You're on the air.
What do you think about the when a church, well, let's say individual believers, interact with the culture in general, specifically like in politics now, where some of the characteristics of true God, you know, like personal responsibility and being kind to each other and things like that are true about him, but to use that the way it's being used now to kind of bring unity into the nation and to try to establish values that are more morally in line with what the true God says, but you know, of course, you know, without Jesus, this is still just some sort of idol, I would think, as far as the culture in general. But I've just been having a lot of conversations and trying to sort this out with people, and I guess right now my response is, when it comes to politics, any idol will do, as long as the idol has the right type of characteristics that it wants all of us to, how it wants us to behave. But as a church, I think, you know, we'd have to be crystal clear that this has nothing to do with getting to heaven. This is just possibly making the world a little bit a better place to live right now.
And you know, I'm not really sure that I would call it idolatry from God's point of view that Jews and Muslims and Christians say get together to help build homes for the homeless.
Well, it's when they talk about God, like when you got, like on last Saturday with Glenn Beck, you know, you got the imam, the rabbi, and who knows who else standing up talking about God.
Right.
You know, what would you say that God is? Would you say this is just ignorance of the true God, or is this an idol we're talking about in that kind of a group, in that kind of a setting?
Well, the God there that they're really talking about is the God of common sense morality, and that is found in Christianity, that's found in Judaism, Muslims. For example, when we stood on the in line for pro-life, we stood with Muslims and Jews, and I had no problem doing that, and I wouldn't consider that to be idolatry.
Well, that's what I was wondering. That's what I think, is Yahweh would agree with those things.
Yes, he really would, and he rewards unbelievers who follow outwardly those commands, even though inwardly they're doing it for the wrong reason.
So where does the church draw the line? All right, let's say you know, the Christian pastor in that group, you know, we can talk about God, what he is or is not, but then do you draw the line and say, but we're not going to try to talk to him in this context?
I don't think there were...
How would you make that distinction?
I don't think there were any prayers at the Glenn Beck rally, were there?
I didn't see the whole thing.
No. That was just talking about what we would refer to as natural law. That's how I looked at that. And I don't have any trouble joining with people of different beliefs in regard to that.
How do you feel about believers talking among believers, saying we have to put God back in the country? Like that kind of, I guess when believers get kind of vague about who this God is, I don't know. I'm just having trouble on a bunch of different areas and trying to sort it out.
Yeah, I don't think I have a problem here with that. When you're talking about putting God back in the country, I think what they're really talking about is a common sense kind of natural law morality, and they're not talking about Jesus Christ. When Christians talk about putting God back into worship services, that means having a worship service that now is not experiential, that's not the main purpose or entertainment, but is really to speak about Jesus Christ and what he has done for you and the gospel message. So we live in two different kingdoms, so we can talk differently to those outside of the Christian pale in trying to support morality. So if I was a politician, I couldn't care less if they were Muslim or whatever, if they were all against abortion.
Would you still, let's just, you know, you're all of a sudden a senator or whoever, would you still use God as a motivator? Would you use that in your language, or would you stay away from using that term? Like if you're saying that God, because of God being our creator, we should do these sort of things. As a politician, would you say that, or would you just say
I think there is a way if you look at how America started, that they had a view of God in that sense of having, for instance, all men are created equal. You know,
right.
It doesn't matter what God you're talking about there. That's a truth. And so
yeah.
I would stay on that level. But I would also be very obvious that Tom Baker would be a very conservative Lutheran, and that would come through sometimes as to the motivation if somebody was asking me why I'm doing what I'm doing.
Right. Well, that's what I was kind of thinking, that, you know, the way the country was founded, that human reason will get you to a creator,
yep.
but it won't get you to a redeemer.
No,
that faith can take you that next step.
No, that's well said. Well, hey, thanks so much for calling.
Thanks.
All right.
Sure.
Okay, let's go on to the next person. To whom am I speaking?
Jesse. This is Jesse.
Hey, Jesse. How are you doing?
Howdy. How are you doing today?
Very good. How can I help you?
Well, actually, right now I'm enjoying a beautiful day. I'm at work, but I'm enjoying a beautiful day.
Well, you're at work? Wow. So you're living under the curse, but it's a beautiful day.
Well, I just wanted to... kind of chime in on the I think we have to be very careful when we mix politics and faith. I think we have to be very careful because many Christians can have different political views, and when we speak about political views as if this is God's political view, I think it can be really dangerous, and you get into some bad things. Because see, when I hear, I'm one of those crazy, unique people who try to stay as unbiased as possible, and I hear people on both sides, for example, on the conservative side, when I hear people say, let's take America back to the way that it used to be, well, it didn't used to be great for blacks. It didn't used to be great. Everything about America wasn't great. So when many blacks hear that statement, they have a negative view of the history of America. And so I think we ought to be careful when we try to mix God and faith in politics, because I think you can be, it can become a stumbling block.
Here's my point of view. If you're going to do that, and God does speak to some political things that you can speak from the pulpit, the only way you can do that is you have to point to a Bible verse that backs you up.
Right.
And if you can't point to a Bible verse, then there's no way you can say this is God's will at this time.
And I think people, you should go to the extra mile of making the distinction between the good things of past, of old, and the bad things of old. See, because if you don't make a distinction and you leave people to interpret what you mean by what you say, I think that's dangerous. And I think it's the obligation of the speaker to make that distinction, to be clear about what you really mean.
I think that's an excellent point, and I sure appreciate you calling. We'll continue this conversation when we get back. Thank you, Jesse. Thank you, Joe. Of course, now let's get the third J in. Maybe James will call. We'll have three J's, but we'll be back. And I want to continue a little bit what Jesse said when we get back from the break.
You didn't have divorce in mind when you said I do, but here you are, hoping for divorce recovery. Who are you after the divorce anyway? Life doesn't end just because your marriage does. Learn how to heal, recover, and move on after divorce next time, Woman to Woman.
Saturday mornings at 9:30 on KFUO Radio.
Don't miss the 92nd Annual Greek Festival happening all weekend long, Labor Day weekend, at St. Nicholas Church at Forest Park and King's Highway. The Greek Fest is the oldest ethnic festival in the St. Louis area and has been voted as the number one ethnic festival by St. Louis Magazine. Enjoy Greek food, beverages, pastries, imported gifts, music, and entertainment on Saturday through Monday, Labor Day weekend, beginning at 11 o'clock in the morning. That's the Greek Festival.
Are humans and chimpanzees really as similar as science thinks? The answer next on today's Creation Moments. And now, here's our Creation Moments host, Ian Taylor.
One commonly heralded claim to the evolution of man from the animal kingdom is the statement that humans and chimpanzees are more than 98% genetically identical. Well, many people think this claim has been proven, but it has always been an assumption made by believers in evolution. Now geneticists have begun to examine this claim. Researchers recently completed the first detailed map of one chimpanzee chromosome. Well, that alone should tell us that the claim of genetic similarity between humans and chimps has never been proven. Well, then they compared this with the corresponding human chromosome. In a detailed examination, they found 68,000 small differences in the DNA between the two genes. An analysis of the 231 genes of this chromosome showed that 83% of them would make proteins that differed from one another. They noted that if this pattern held for all the comparisons between human and chimpanzee genes, they would expect thousands of differences. In other words, rather than humans and chimps being more than 98% genetically identical, so far they have proven to be 83% genetically different. There are, of course, more differences between humans and chimps than genetics. Humans were created in God's image and therefore are morally responsible to God. And most importantly, humans have been redeemed by God's Son, Jesus Christ, on the cross of Calvary.
Creation Moments exists to glorify God by presenting scientific evidence for the literal truth of the Bible. For more information, visit our website at creationmoments.com or call us toll-free at 1-800-42-BIBLE and join us again for another Creation Moment, proclaiming evidence of God's truth.
KFUO Radio offers a selection of live worship services each week, providing listeners the opportunity to utilize the service that fits their schedule. One option is offered by Peace Lutheran Church in South St. Louis County. Pastor Dennis Castens of the congregation invites you to listen and enjoy scripture, sermon, and song every Saturday evening at 5 p.m. Listen this Saturday, and if you're well served by what you hear, tell a friend. That's live worship every Saturday evening at 5 on listener-supported KFUO Radio.
Hi, I'm Mark Hawkinson, host of Jubilation on Sunday afternoons. Coming up this Sunday, your favorite psalm verses, like, "Those who trust in the Lord are as Mount Zion, which cannot be moved but abides forever," or, "The Lord is my shepherd," or, "He who dwells in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty." Great verses, faith-strengthening music blended together to make an unbeatable combination for your Sunday afternoon. Join me, won't you? That's Jubilation from 1 to 4 p.m. on KFUO Radio.
Tom Baker back here on Law and Gospel as we're taking phone calls at 505-7850 and 1-800-730-2727. Just before the next phone call that's up, I do want to respond just a bit to Jamie. I really do agree with you. I'm sorry, to Jesse. Jesse, who's called. That pulpits ought not be talking about political things or saying things that aren't really true, saying them in a general way, like, "I wish we could get back to the old days." I don't want to get back to the old days. Each of us have some things in our background that we're glad we're over with that. But they're, well, when people talk that way, Jesse, they're really referring to a morality. I mean, how many people went around saying that marriage should be between two people of the same gender back in the old days? That's what they're really referring to. And they're just not being, they're not thinking enough to recognize when they say something like that, they could be sending a wrong message to someone like you and others. So I really appreciate your insights. We're going back to the phone lines right now, and I believe we're going to be talking here to Jack. Jack, are you on?
Sure.
Yes.
Thank you for taking my call.
Go ahead, sir.
Pastor, your question about teen worship
brings
several questions to my mind. One is, what is a truly friendly or teen-friendly worship service, and is the Lutheran service book teen-friendly? Even if it's not, shouldn't we just treat teens as adults and worship all in the same manner? It seems to me that that would be more consistent with Paul's theory of maturation in divine wisdom.
Well, let me, we're all babes. Let me respond. Stay on, and then we'll continue the conversation. About 2 weeks ago, I was talking about this and found out that unlike the baby boomers that really wanted to have separate worship services, today's teen, they really want to be part of the general church. They don't want to be separate from the general church. So I think that's your first point. I think part of the problem is that a lot of churches, they're really giving their kids cake when they want steak and potatoes. In other words, they're not really giving an in-depth study of theology. They're giving, as I said earlier, a kind of a mutant Christianity, which is moralistic, that you better be good, therapeutic, if you believe in God, you'll have a wonderful life, and deism, Jesus isn't really necessary, any God will do. And I tell you, so many churches, because they're not radical enough in their theology, end up with people yawning, if you get my meaning.
I do.
And I think teens are quite capable of being fed meat and potatoes. They don't have to stay on the milk of the word. And they can be brought into the various segments of the church. They don't have to be separated and be worshiping somewhere else or doing things separate from the adults.
Well, over the years, so many Christian people have been brought into the church as young people, beginning in even before their teens, and throughout their teens, and they're not treated any different than any others. They go through the same program of being confirmed, and they learn in the same way as other members of the church do. There is no separate program. There never has been any thought in any church that I had have belonged to of treating them any differently, just bringing them up in the same way that others are.
Yes, I think, you know, we have a huge problem in some public schools, and the public school teachers will tell you that they're getting very little cooperation from the parents, and I find that also, if you don't have parents, if parents end up sending their kids to church and getting involved with youth pastors simply to keep their children off drugs and away from premarital sex, that's really not that good an example of parents.
Well, how does teen-friendly worship service help that?
Well, I don't think you need to make a teen-friendly worship service.
Oh, okay.
See, that's the point I'm trying to make here. I think they're quite capable of getting at the level. I was hearing a pastor recently who used to, when he was a kid, he would be in the youth Bible study, but it was so boring, he just went up to the adult Bible study, and they let him stay there, and he now became a pastor in the Lutheran church. And we don't have to dumb things down or change the subject as though the teens are much more interested in environmental concerns. Well, sure they are. But the church has a different message to give, and it's Christ and Him crucified, and you can really be a radical adult or a teen in this world with Christ at your side.
Well, thank you very much, Pastor. I appreciate your comment very much.
Okay, thanks for calling.
Thank you.
All right. Let's go on then to the next caller. Who's this? Hello, you're on the air. I guess you're not on the air. Yeah. Well, call back. We'll put you right back on. We've had Joe, Jesse, and Jack. Isn't that interesting? Three J's. I wonder if there's going to be a James. I don't know. We'll see. With whom am I speaking?
You're speaking with James.
Oh, of all the days I want you to phone, this is it. We now have four J's in a row.
Wow.
Joe, Jesse, Jack, and James. Well, that's the only reason I wanted you to call. Okay, goodbye. Oh, you have a question,
no,
too?
I do. I've been listening to you talk about the youth, and it occurred to me that maybe the youth want to be fed, not led. And
absolutely.
And seekers with a nonconformist bent probably find it therapeutic to have honest doubt about their morality. And they'll probably question rituals and authority with passion. So I think that they will always run away from a lukewarm, self-satisfying church. And so I guess behind that comment, I'd like for you to give me a law and gospel understanding of Revelation chapter 3, verses 14 through 22, if you have a chance. But kind of take a look at that and give me a law and gospel perspective of how that church would hold the youth.
Okay, now... speak a little bit about what your thinking is, first of all, about what is it, Revelation 3, 14 to 22. How do you recognize it?
Well, that self-satisfying church, like I said, the those seekers with a nonconformist bent that find it therapeutic to have honest doubt and question their morality and the rituals and the authority of established churches, because they want to be fed, not led, and it's so they would run with passion away from a self-satisfied, lukewarm church like that, I would think.
Okay, do you want to stay on the line while I talk about it?
Yes, I can stay on.
Okay, it's the church at Laodicea. And the Lord begins, "These things says the Amen, the faithful and true witness, the beginning of the creation of God. I know your works, that you are neither cold nor hot. I could wish you were cold or hot." Now, let me give you an example of that, James. I had a good friend of mine in California who was very disturbed during the voting as to whether or not you should have same-sex marriage. His pastor would not speak about it at all in Bible study or anything, because he felt that there were some people for it and some people against it, and therefore it would divide the congregation. That's what I would consider a lukewarm church. And
yes,
he says, "Because you are lukewarm and neither cold nor hot, I will spew you out of my mouth. Because you say, I am rich, have become wealthy, and have need of nothing." Now, see, some people, because they get these riches, like the Pharisees, they thought they were being blessed by God. And they did not recognize that you are wretched, miserable, poor, blind, and naked. Remember in John chapter 9, when Jesus healed a blind man, the Pharisees come up to him and say, "Do you think we're blind also?" And he says, "Because you say you see, that shows you're blind." In other words, okay, because they thought they were so wonderful in their theology and knew that they were going to be saved by their works, they didn't realize how blind they were to the true God, who saves people not by their works but by grace. So, "I counsel you to buy from me gold refined in the fire, that you may be rich, and white garments, that you may be clothed, that the shame of your nakedness may not be revealed, and anoint your eyes with eye salve, that you may see." In other words, we talk about the law being either a mirror or a hammer. Some would use this verse as eye salve. In other words, when you put it on your eyes, you see more clearly. And therefore, when you read the law, you see what a need you have for a Savior, and the need for the white garment. Remember, Adam and Eve, as soon as they sinned, they ran and put on those fig leaves. And we talked about this with Mark Smith on Wednesday. Part of the reason they realized they were naked, according to Ezekiel, is that they had a glory shining around them, and they lost that when they sinned. And so that's, and of course, Christ gives us the robe of righteousness. Now, he is talking to a church, and that's why he says, "I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come into him and dine with him, and he with me." The only way you can hear his voice is you are of faith. So this verse should never be used for unbelievers, because unbelievers can never hear his voice. And it ends, therefore, to him who overcomes, I will grant to sit with me on my throne, as I also overcame and sat down with my Father on his throne. He who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. Now, having gone through that, do you have a specific question?
Yes, the application, I guess, of youth that have been brought up in a self-satisfying church that won't tackle issues, that won't allow the growth of their honest doubt or their practical doubt about things, they're going to question ritual and authority, because that's what youth do. And so in a church, the way you mentioned it, your friend, where the pastor won't confront certain things, they will run with passion away from, I guess, that kind of church. And I guess that's the self-satisfied church that I think the youth would, who come up in church, kind of walk away, because they want to be fed and not led.
Well, you know, some people say that these youth get turned off with the hypocrisy of the Christian. What they need to understand is that everybody in church is a sinner. And it ought not be a surprise to them that they don't act like Jesus Christ. That's why he's our only Savior. So just by helping them to understand that not only those around them, but they also fall far short of the glory of God, why is that a surprise, therefore, that we see Christians divorcing like other people do and this sort of thing? Well, we're all still in the world of Satan, and this does not surprise me when these things happen, and even worse.
I think that's the question that they are asking.
That's
the honest doubt that they have. I think those are the things that they're opposing, like Thomas, except I touch or I see in a practical way, I can't believe yet. And if you don't have a place for them or a patience for them, then they run away from that. And that's in addressing, I guess, your question at the top of the hour about why you believe, I think that it's that bent that they have, that it's therapeutic for them to have that kind of honest doubt, to question morality and to question the rituals and the authority around them.
Yeah, the church needs to be able to speak to their questions and answer them forthrightly, but we finally have to let the Holy Spirit. Remember, who was one of the greatest failures? He just failed again and again in the Scriptures as he tried to get the message of God across to people.
St. Peter.
No.
No? Who was it?
You're talking to a Lutheran. So what is the answer all the time?
Jesus.
Yes. He was a total failure. He went to his own hometown, and by the time he was done preaching, they were ready to throw him off a cliff, young and old alike.
Okay.
So that tells us something. You know, Jesus was the most loving person who ever existed on earth, and that didn't even persuade people to believe in him. You finally have to recognize that the way faith comes about is by preaching the gospel, which he did at the Samaritan well with the woman, and then the whole town was converted, in contrast to Jesus' own hometown, where they wanted to throw him off a cliff.
Yes, that's true. I guess my final question to you, Pastor, I heard you speak about this amalgamated faith based on the Baptist thing that my friend and I were talking about when he said that my roots were based in that, being that my grandmother was an A&E Methodist and my mother a missionary Baptist, and I've married a Pentecostal wife. But I think that I guess when I think about that, the fact that I grew up in a very ecumenical neighborhood and was sent to a parochial school which was Catholic and have a lot of Missouri Synod Lutheran friends, that I think this amalgamated moralistic therapeutic stuff is what helps me separate the essentials from the incidental.
Well, I think what you're really saying, too, is now that your understanding of law and gospel has come quite a ways, you can see how each of those sometimes had an overly law element that made God more into a just God and you into a law obeyer to get all kinds of blessings. But each of them also had a gospel element where Jesus and Him alone was the only reason for our salvation. So I would say take a look at back at all of that tradition, and if you would take the best of it, you know what you would become?
What would I become, Pastor?
Lutheran.
Not a universalist confession?
No, I said the best of it, not the worst.
Okay. Well, you should have been around my table as this young guy comes home as an altar boy from Catholic school and for dinner and talks about confession to his Methodist grandmother and Baptist mother. So I'll leave it at that. And I just kind of say to all of my friends that I've kind of made amongst the years, because I feel comfortable wherever I go in God's house. I've been invited a lot of places. Is that I'm just a Christian. And I've learned to separate the essentials from the incidentals, that I am a son, and I do know who Christ is.
Well, thank you very much for calling, James. God bless you.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.
God bless you, Pastor.
You know, there's no doubt that we hear a lot from various religions. And we need to, as he says, divide the incidentals from that which is correct. I like talking about the fundamental teachings of Christianity. And each of those particular traditions, denominations he was speaking of, they are Christian because they hold to Jesus as being the one and only way of salvation. Where we as Lutherans are different is that we tend to see that in their other teachings they appear to contradict that belief. For example, I'll just take one example. You can't say that Jesus gets all the credit for my salvation, but I'm saved because I invited him into my heart. If you invite someone into your house, and you're taking credit for whatever good comes from that. So Jesus doesn't get 100% of the credit. You finally had to make the right decision. And that is what the Reformation really was all about, is there is nothing a human being can do to make the right decision as an unbeliever. God makes the decision. He saves you without your help and cooperation. Let's go back to the phone lines. I'm Tom Baker. With whom am I speaking?
This is Brian.
Brian, oh nuts! You couldn't call yourself Dryan or something, so I get the fifth J, do you?
There's no J here.
No, I just talked to Joe and Jesse and Jack and James, and so boy, I've also noticed something else. I guess women don't listen to this program.
No,
I know what it is. They're so much smarter than you guys. They understand everything I say, and therefore have no need to phone.
Well, I can't speak for them.
No, you can't. So speak for yourself, Brian.
The reader's edition of the Walther book.
Yes, which
does that come on CD?
No.
Okay, and the edition that they had that came out of the original, does that come out on CD either?
I don't think either does. No, neither would. That would be very interesting to do that. Because the Book of Concord, which is the Confessions of the Lutheran Church, is on CD, as well as all of Luther's writings. But I'm unaware of this. You might want to contact Concordia Publishing House and see about that. Now, I will be, by the way, selling the Reader's Edition at St. Paul de Pere this coming Sunday at 9:30 when I do the Bible study there. And if you go to CPH, it's $30 right now. I'm selling them for $25. And with another book, too, on law and gospel that I'm, you know, going to be talking about there. But
how long are you going to be there on Sunday?
9:30 to 10:30 is the Bible class.
10:30, okay.
And then
I might try to come over there and pick that up if I can, if I got the time.
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah. And if not, just let me know. We'll get it over to you somehow.
Okay. I'd just like to say real quickly before I leave, I read a great quote the other day from G.K. Chesterton.
Yes, go ahead.
He was talking about miracles, and he said that science hasn't disproved miracles. They've just given them scientific names.
Scientists can't disprove miracles?
Scientists haven't disproved miracles.
Yes.
They've just given them scientific names.
That's interesting. Well, you know, when I was going to the seminary, and it was quite liberal at that time, all the miracles of Jesus, like the fellow who supposedly had an exorcism done and the devils went into the pigs, they said, no. He was just an epileptic, and he went into a seizure, and that scared the pigs. Which is kind of interesting that the pigs would drown in water. Have you ever tried to drown a pig?
No.
They just keep popping back up to the surface.
Especially wild pigs, you only get near them. They're very tough.
Well, these would have been their herds, because they weren't happy with Jesus when he took those demons, put them in pigs. Of course, the demons said, put us in the pigs, and of course, they had no idea that they could drown.
That's the funniest thing I find about everything in the Bible and about people who are secular who approach it. They think that when the secular world discovers something, that God didn't put it there for them to find out.
Yes. No, absolutely.
Yeah.
Hey, appreciate
anyway,
the call.
Weekend.
Yeah, and by the way, I'm going to be live on Labor Day.
Oh, great. Okay, I'll be tuning in.
Okay, thank you. I'm Tom Baker, and on Labor Day, we're going to be, I think, the only one in the whole studio that day. But, yeah, that's right. David Miller is going to be in during the day doing some of the programming. But tune in, and we'll be back at 6:05. We're going to be talking about the lost sheep and the lost coin, but we're going to do it from a law and gospel perspective. So if you have some friends, and Labor Day, maybe they're home from work, what an opportunity to get them to listen, because we're going to have some radical theology about the lost sheep and the lost coin from Luke 15. In the meantime, Sunday. No, it's not car racing. It's radical theology at St. Paul's Lutheran Church, 12345 Manchester. Who can forget that address? That's near 270 and Manchester, just east of 270. I'm Tom Baker. Hope to see you there. And we'll have a free copy of the good news and a reduced cost on that new book. Till then, God bless.
Listen to Law and Gospel with Tom Baker Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. on KFUO Radio. You can write Pastor Tom at KFUO Radio, 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. Or at this email address, lawgospel@lawgospel.com. Law and Gospel is archived for your listening convenience at KFUO.org.